Hi everyone, good morning. My name is Qiu Shi and I'm a PhD student at the University of Hong Kong, working with my supervisor Yu Xiangyang. And this work is joint work with my supervisor. And you can also find the QR code here linked to the archive paper. We will talk about something about the ancillary-free quantum metrology achieving the Heisenberg limit. I'll first introduce some background. What's the current status in this direction of research and why it's important to study this problem? And I will give an informal introduction to the main results. After that, I will introduce some technical tools, some preliminary tools like quantum facial information, vectorization technique, spectral properties of quantum channels, and so on. And with these tools, I'll introduce our main results, basically two theorems. The first theorem is about a sufficient condition for achieving the Heisenberg limit without control. And I will also give some examples. In the second theorem, I will consider if we have repeated unitary control following the channel to estimate. What's a sufficient condition for achieving the Heisenberg limit? And I'll also give an interesting example in that case. And finally, if we still have some remaining time, I will talk a little bit about another of our recent work, where we proposed an efficient tensor network algorithm for optimizing metrological protocols in the ancillary-free scenarios or the ancillary constrained scenarios. Okay, so let's start. In a word, quantum metrology is about how to exploit some quantum resources to sense some physical parameters better. It has already had many applications, for example, in the detection of the gravitational wave, in the interferometry. Or we can use squeezed light to enhance the precision of measuring time in quantum atomic clocks. And also it's possible to enhance the resolution of the magnetic sensing of living cells, which could be useful for biomedical imaging. In general, here we can have a general framework for the theoretical quantum metrology, and here we only focus on the single parameter estimation. Our goal is to estimate a single parameter theta. Usually, this parameter could be encoded into some unknown physical process, and we could prepare some kind of probe state and insert or interleave a sequence of control operations and let these control operations interact with the unknown process, for example, n times, such that finally we will get the output state and we can make measurements on the output state to get some measurement outcomes. And we assume that we can repeat this whole process for many, many times, let's say new times, and new approaches infinity. Such that finally we will collect a large amount of measurement data and we can construct a probability distribution of the measurement outcomes. And then we can construct an estimator of theta from the probability distribution of the measurement outcomes. And our goal, of course, is to minimize the mean squared error, delta theta squared. And in this work, we assume that our estimator is unbiased, which means that its expectation value is equal to the true value of the parameter. A problem in quantum metrology, which has aroused a large amount of interest, is the quantum channel estimation. So here, we actually want to estimate parameter theta by n uses of some unknown quantum channel e theta. And typically, we have two types or two families of strategies to do this. The first commonly considered type is called parallel strategy. For the parallel strategy, we can make parallel use of n quantum channels and make them act on a probe state, go not. And to get some quantum advantage, we need this rho naught to be an entangled state. And here, we also assume that we can have some ancilla, and the ancilla may have a dimension which could grow with n. So in general, we need such ancilla to achieve the optimal performance. And we assume that the measurement is already optimal because we can use something called SLD to find the optimal measurement. So we don't care about the optimization of the measurement in this work. So for parallel strategy, we only care about how to find a optimal input probe state to get the best metrological gain. Another type of strategy is called the sequential strategy. In a sequential strategy, we can make sequential use of n quantum channels, one after another. And we can insert a sequence of control operations. And also we can prepare a probe state, and also we can use some ancilla, and we make optimal measurements. So for a sequential strategy, we can optimize both the probe state and the sequence of control operations to get the best possible estimation precision. It's also worth noting that the set of possible sequential strategies is larger than the set of possible parallel strategies, because any parallel strategy can always be simulated by a sequential strategy by using swap gate for each control operation. And to quantify the metrological performance, we could use a well-known quantum Kramer-Rohr bond. This bond is tight for unbiased estimator. So it tells us that the mean squared error of estimating theta is lower bounded by the inverse of the quantum Fisher information of the output state. And here nu is, as I show in the last slide, is the number of experiments we can repeat, and we assume it's very large. Here, this quantum Fisher information, or QFI for short, could be understood as a characterization of how much information we could extract about theta from the state rho theta. And since this bond is tight, it's a faithful characterization of the metrological precision we could achieve. So there has been a lot of research on the optimal QFI one could achieve. And it has now been shown that in the asymptotic limit, when the number of channels n goes to infinity, the optimal performance for both parallel strategies and for sequential strategies are actually the same. But we also know that when n is a small number, for example, if it's 2 or 3 or 4, the optimal performance of these two strategies could be different, and sequential strategies can have an advantage for small n. And it's also well known that the asymptotic behavior of QFN, so let's say the scaling of QFI with respect to the number of channels n, can only have two asymptotic behavior. So it could either follow the Heisenberg limit or follow the standard quantum limit. And there's a sufficient and a necessary condition called Hamiltonian not in cross-span condition. This condition means that if you define Hamiltonian in this way, here K KJ is the cross operator, and this dot means the derivative of the operator with respect to theta, the parameter of interest. And we can easily check that if it's a unitary channel in a one parameter group, then this Hamiltonian actually is the generator of the group. So that's how it gets its name. And the cross span is defined as the Hermitian span of Ki dagger Kj for all I and j. And it's also easy to see that for unitary estimation, or we call it noiseless estimation, this Hamiltonian is not in cross span. So for noiseless estimation, we can achieve the so-called Heisenberg limit based on this relation. And this coefficient is just kind of distance between the Hamiltonian and the cross span. But in the presence of noise, usually in generic cases, one could not achieve the Heisenberg limit anymore, and one would only achieve the standard quantum limit. Note that even with classical resources, even with separable states, one could still achieve the standard quantum limit. But with quantum resources, in this case, even if Hamiltonian is in the cross band, it's still possible to get a larger constant, a larger coefficient for the standard quantum limit. So you can still get kind of quantum advantage, but you cannot get a scaling advantage if Hamiltonian is in the cross band. So in general, it's favorable still to get the Heisenberg limit because you will get this n squared quadratic advantage. And also both scalings and even the coefficients can be attained with parallel strategies by introducing the noiseless ancillary and applying the quantum error correction. But this ancilla actually grows with the number of channels n. And the ancilla is assumed to be noiseless. So in many real-world experiments, this may not be unfavorable. So this stimulates the interest into finding ancilla-free metrology protocols and study how the performance would be in ancilla-free scenarios. Ancilla-free metrology was mainly studied using ancilla-free quantum error correction code for Hamiltonian parameter estimation under Markovian noise in previous work. It's a kind of special type of channel estimation problem. If we consider sequential strategies, it was already shown that ancilla-free QEC could achieve the Heisenberg limit if these two conditions are satisfied. The first is called Hamiltonian not in Lindblad span condition. So it's similar to Hamiltonian not in cross band, but here the Lindblad operators is the one who take the role of the noise. And also if signal commutes with noise, under these two conditions, we can use such a sequential strategy with fast control at a high frequency. Another remarkable work in this direction is for parallel strategy. So it was shown that ancilla-free QEC could achieve either Heisenberg limit or standard quantum limit with parallel strategy when n goes to infinity. So basically, it could achieve the optimal performance for any types of noise. But it still has the limit that it only works for this special type of estimation problem, because here, even for the parallel strategy, one still needs to apply these control operations, these QEC control operations. So this is not applicable to quantum channel estimation. And also one needs to have a large entangled state, which may not be easy to prepare. especially the current technology of experimental demonstration of quantum sensors may have very limited programmability, especially for optical experiments. For example, an experimental PIL paper implemented the estimation of 8 channels with the same unitary control in an optical loop. So in such cases, the requirement of recovery operations and syndrome measurements, even in the so-called ancilla-free quantum error correction code, can still be challenging, because these operations in fact require additional ancilla. And very recently, actually about 1 month ago, Zhou derived some conditions for achieving the standard quantum limit, as well as some other sub-Heisenberg limit bounds with limited control for single qubit channel estimation. So such control is beyond the quantum error correction and maybe easier to implement. But this technique seems cannot be easily generalized to higher dimensions. And also in that paper, the Heisenberg limit cannot be achieved. So still, after all, a general framework for addressing the ancilla-free quantum metrology, especially whether and how the Heisenberg limit can be achieved, it's still missing. In this work, we consider such an experiment-friendly setup. We consider the estimation of n quantum channels followed by the same unitary control. And this can be easily implemented in an optical loop. For example, we illustrate the n equals to 2 case here with an optical loop made of mirrors. And it's also worth noting that this protocol is applicable to quantum metrology with fixed dimension noiseless ancilla, because we can just replace this E theta by E theta tensored with identity channel on the ancilla space and still use this formalism. Okay, now with such background and with the current demand of experiments, it is important to study the problem of ancilla-free quantum metrology. Before going into the details, I'll first introduce some main results. Our work used some techniques from the spectral properties of quantum channels. And so it builds a connection between the quantum metrology field and the asymptotic theory of quantum channels. And intuitively, we find that the Heisenberg limit or standard quantum limit could arise from the non-zero derivatives of peripheral eigenvalues of the quantum channels. Peripheral eigenvalues just means that the eigenvalues with modulus of 1. And we will give sufficient condition for achieving the Heisenberg limit with repeated application of the channel to estimate without ancilla in a control-free scenario, and also a condition for achieving Heisenberg limit in a control-enhanced scenario by inserting repeated identical unitary control without ancilla. And we will show several examples to illustrate that our approach applies to some more resource-deficient scenarios, and we can compare it with quantum error correction approach. Here, in our approach, we use identical unitary control and we don't use syndrome measurements. And in some cases, our strategy could be robust to some kind of state preparation error. Okay, so the first preliminary technique I'll introduce is the vectorization technique. Here we want to study the QFI of the output state by repeated application of E theta followed by unitary control UC. And by definition, the QFI of a quantum state is defined by trace of rho L square, where this L is the so-called SLD defined by this equation. So we can see that SLD is a solution related to the derivative of the quantum state. So it kind of characterizes how sensitive the state is to the parameter. But typically, for large N, this definition is not easier to evaluate because it concerns the spectral decomposition of rho theta to solve this equation. But for pure state, actually, we can find a simpler expression in such a closed form formula. So it's natural to ask whether we could use some formula similar to the pure state QFI to study the QFI for a general mixed state. And the answer is positive. We need to vectorize the state. So we can define such an unphysical state, which is actually a vectorized rho theta and normalized by this trace rho square. So this double cat means that we write a density matrix as a vector. So for example, a d by d matrix as a d squared dimensional vector. And with this unphysical associated state, we can similarly define the SLD, associated SLD with tilde. And we can define the associated QFI also denoted by tilde. And then the good thing is that this associated QFI actually could provide a lower bound on the actual QFI for rho theta. And this coefficient is not zero, since this lambda max means the maximal eigenvalue of the matrix rho theta. So to study the scaling of the original quantum fish information, it is sufficient to study the scaling of this associated QFI to lower bound the original QFI. And in this work, actually, we mainly focus on this associated QFI. First, we can have a simple lemma. So this associated QFI can be given in such a simple closed form formula, which is very similar to the QFI for a pure state. So this simplicity actually facilitates our analysis. Only with some kind of different normalization factors here. Another technique I want to introduce before the main result is the very, very brief introduction to some basic notions in the asymptotic theory of quantum channels. So assume that a quantum channel E theta is given in the cross operator form, Ki theta. We can write its Liouville representation, a transition matrix T theta, in this way, in terms of the cross operators. This T theta is a D squared by D squared matrix for a D-dimensional system. And the output state rho theta is simply computed by repeated application of T theta. So it's just matrix multiplication in this vectorized form. And for T theta, we can find the spectrum, the eigenvalues lambda I with the eigenvectors Ri in the vectorized form or if we talk about the matrix, or I'll call it the eigenmatrix. And also all the eigenvalues of P theta satisfy the modulus upper bounded by one. And only those peripheral eigenvalues or eigenvectors take effect when n goes to infinity. So this is a good property because in the asymptotic limit, we only need to care about the peripheral eigenspace. More importantly, for these peripheral eigenvalues, the Jordan blocks for them are all one-dimensional. So this means that even if T theta itself in general may not be a diagonalizable matrix, but if we only care about the peripheral eigenspace, then it acts like a diagonalizable matrix because all the Jordan blocks are one-dimensional. And also every channel has at least one fixed point state if the eigenvalue goes to one. Eigenvalues either are real or come in complex conjugate pairs. If Ri is the eigenvector, then Ri dagger is also an eigenvector with the eigenvalue in its complex conjugate form. And for any eigenvalue, non-unity eigenvalue, the trace of the eigenmatrix will be zero because of the trace preserving property of the quantum channel. Now, with these tools, we can just introduce a few more notations, and then we can state our first theorem. So we assume that we are given a channel T theta in its Liouville representation with peripheral eigenvalues lambda I. Here S just denotes the set of indices in the peripheral eigenspace. And also it has peripheral eigenvectors Ri. If the channel is not diagonalizable, then we just add some additional linearly independent vectors such that we will have d squared vectors that form a Jordan basis spanning the whole space. And we can decompose the input state rho naught in this basis. Here, Ri may depend on the value of theta. And accordingly, Ai may also depend on the value of theta, even if rho naught is not a function of theta. And also the output state is computed by matrix multiplication with the associated state defined by its vectorization and normalization. With these notations now, we have our first theorem. It could be regarded as a sufficient condition for achieving Heisenberg limit or standard quantum limit. So we can compute the associated QFI for the output state. And we can find that it has n squared scaling, n scaling, and some other terms. So if the first term, the first coefficient is non-zero, it would correspond to a Heisenberg limit. If the first term is zero, but the second term is non-zero, it corresponds to a standard quantum limit. Note that we are talking about a lower bound on the actual quantum fish information. And it's easy to see that these coefficients are related to the derivative of the eigenvalues. So to have non-zero coefficients, the channel must have some non-zero derivatives of eigenvalues. And also if the first term is zero, we also need that the quantum channel has some non-zero derivative of eigenvectors to achieve the standard quantum limit. And finally, note that this beta ij is related to the inner product between Ri and Rj. So if the channel has orthogonal eigenvectors, It means that if I is not equal to j, then beta ij would be zero. It would greatly simplify this equation, as we can see now. So if all the peripheral eigenvectors of p theta are mutually orthogonal, and there exists some peripheral eigenvalue with non-zero derivative, then we know that Heisenberg limit is asymptotically achievable. So this condition could be much simpler. We just need to find one non-zero derivative of the peripheral eigenvalue in this case. And also a related result is for a unital channel. For a unital channel t theta, if there exists some peripheral eigenvalue with non-zero derivative, and if the associated eigenmatrix is either proportional to Hermitian or satisfy trace R square equals to zero, actually this just means RJ and RJ dagger are orthogonal, then the Heisenberg limit is asymptotically achievable. So in this case, we only need RJ and RJ dagger are orthogonal, actually. Okay, so these corollaries would be useful later because especially the second one could use some simple conditions for achieving the Heisenberg limit with repeated unitary control. So just to have a taste, if we have repeated unitary control following each use of the channel e theta, we can just regard the channel to estimate and the control together as a new channel. And then this is reduced to the problem of achieving Heisenberg limit without control. But before that, let us look at two examples to see the applications of these results for achieving Heisenberg limit without control. The first example is about a commonly studied case. So we want to estimate theta from n repeated applications of sigma z rotation with the defacing noise. And here we assume that the phase phi and the noise p are all functions of the parameter of interest theta. And by the Hamiltonian knotting cross span condition, we could compute the Hamiltonian and compute the span. So based on the previous background knowledge, we know that achieving the Heisenberg limit even without the constraints on ancilla is equivalent to Hamiltonian knotting cross span, equivalent to non-zero derivative of the phase phi, and the p must be either zero or one, which means that actually at the true value of the parameter, the channel is a unitary. There's actually no noise. However, if at p equals to zero or p equals to one, the Hamiltonian is ill-defined if we consider the derivative of cross operators. So we can use our approach to reevaluate this problem. We can consider the Liouville representation t theta, which has four eigenvalues. And actually, we care about the last two eigenvalues, lambda 3 and lambda 4, and they could have non-zero derivatives if either the phase phi has non-zero derivative or the noise p has non-zero derivative if p equals to zero or one. So in this case, even when the phi has zero derivative, but p has non-zero derivative at p equals to zero or one, it is still possible to achieve the Heisenberg limit, which cannot be captured by the conventional Hamiltonian knotting cross-band condition based on this framework. And we can just choose a linear combination. We just choose a linear combination of fixed point state, and R3, R4 correspond to the last two eigenvalues as the input state. The second example is about...
Sorry, can I ask a question about the previous slide? So,
yes.
So I was wondering, like, since you're saying that if p is zero, it can have non-zero derivative, like how would that be possible? Because like p is like always a positive number, and then it seems like if it is differentiable, it must have derivative equal to zero. When the value is equal to zero, it's like a hyperbolic function or something. So,
Yeah, so you mean the derivative defined in the neighborhood of p equals to zero must include a negative value?
Yeah. So for example, if p is like equal to zero and then the derivative of p is not equal to zero, then it seems like there must be some negative value of p in the neighborhood of the point, and which would be like a non-physical situation.
So here, I actually want to consider the single direction change of the of p, like only in the like in the right direction, or maybe maybe it's also possible to understand this result as very small p close to zero, then even if the eigenvalue is not on the peripheral space, but it's very close to the peripheral eigenspace, and for a large but finite n, it would have a similar, it would have a behavior close to the Heisenberg limit. Maybe a more rigorous analysis would be in that direction, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, but thanks for the question. Okay. Yes. So I'll just give another example. So in this example, so in the last example, actually the eigenvectors are orthogonal to each other. But in the second example, I will show a case where these peripheral eigenvectors can be non-orthogonal to each other, and it may have some interesting behavior. So we can consider estimate theta from repeated applications of a Q-tree channel. This channel maps state 0 to 2, maps state 1 to 2, but it maps state 2 to either 2 or 0 or 1. Okay, this is actually inspired by a work by Albert. So this channel has the interesting property that it would have some non-orthogonal eigenmatrices. It has two non-zero eigenvalues and two non-orthogonal associated eigenmatrices. And still, it suffers from the similar problem of the singularity of the HNKS condition. So at theta equals to zero, we can choose an input state as the linear combination of R1 and R2 or some alpha. And we can compute the associated QFI by theorem one. And we can use it to lower bound the actual QFI. And this lower bound actually oscillates with even n or odd n. Of course, this does not necessarily mean that the actual QFI also has this oscillating behavior, since this bond is not a tight bond. But I think an interesting observation is that we numerically compute the actual QFI and the bound for n up to 100 for alpha equals to 0.9. And at least for such finite n case, we can observe some oscillating behavior of the actual QFI in this blue line. But of course, we don't really know about the asymptotic behavior. But still, I think this is some phenomenon interesting and may be worth further investigation. I think this example is non-trivial because it does not admit a decoherence-free subspace because it has non-orthogonal eigenmatrices. And also it suffers from the singularity of Hamiltonian knotting cross-band condition. Okay, so about the control-free strategy, I'll just present these two examples. And now we will turn to achieving Heisenberg limit with unitary control, which I think may be more interesting. So I'll talk about this theorem two, which is a sufficient condition for achieving the Heisenberg limit with unitary control. Here we assume the channel is unital. For unital channel T theta, let P be the projection on the subspace of eigenmatrices of T dagger T with eigenvalues 1. If at the true value theta naught, first we have the condition T dagger the derivative of T projected on this subspace is a normal operator and is not zero. So intuitively, this guy could be understood as a signal operator. So it means that the signal is non-vanishing in this subspace. And the second condition means that if there exists some unitary such that for some eigenmatrix are not of this signal operator, we will have the unitary equivalence condition, which means the action of the quantum channel on this R naught can be simulated by UC dagger, by the unitary. So intuitively, we can just reverse the effect of this action using UC. And then we can achieve the Heisenberg limit asymptotically. And more importantly, such UC can be identified by an algorithm whenever it exists. So by using this, to use this algorithm, we only need the matrix description of T theta. To identify this unitary control, to get the solution to this unitary equivalence condition, we first reformulate this condition in this way. We define R1 and R2, except for the trivial case where R0 is a Hermitian matrix or proportional to Hermitian matrix. Then we will have two equations. So this UC must simultaneously satisfy two equations. So basically the problem is find the unitary transformation between two input Hermitian matrices and two output Hermitian matrices related by the quantum channel. So we can just apply the spectral decomposition to R1 and R2 and get the subspaces with the degenerate eigenvalues. And we just need to use principal angles between subspaces to characterize their geometrical relations. And the key idea is that we want to find a unitary transformation that preserves all these principal angles between the subspaces we get. The principal angle is defined as the arc cosine value of the singular values of projection on F and projection on G for two subspaces F and G. The algorithm is straightforward, but a little bit cumbersome. So I'll leave the details in the paper and just give a brief sketch of the idea. So the key step is for two subspaces, we can actually reduce the dimension of them and obtain a new set of subspaces with lower dimensions, and preserve all the information about the geometrical relation between them in the new set of subspaces. So we can just choose two sets of orthonormal basis vectors for subspace F and G. So the left figure is for F, right figure is for G. And it must be possible to choose basis vectors in this way. For U1 to U alpha, these two subspaces coincide with each other. And for psi 1 to psi gamma, and for phi 1 to phi delta, they are completely orthogonal to each other. So only non-trivial thing is for V and W. They may have some angles, which is larger than zero and smaller than pi over two. So if these principal angles are different, then we can just separately choose a subspace. For example, if V1 and W1 has a unique angle, then we can just choose a new subspace V1, spanned by V1, a new subspace spanned by W1. And if they have some degenerate angles, then we need to choose some subspace of higher dimensions containing these degenerate vectors. So anyway, we will get a new set of subspaces with lower dimensions after finding these principal angles by computing SVD. And we only need to characterize the principal angles between new subspaces. And after iterative reduction, finally, we will have some subspaces. They either have the same dimensions and have degenerate principal angles, or they are mutually orthogonal. And then we carefully choose a uniquely determined canonical order of basis vectors for each subspace. And we finally only need to find a unitary transformation between two sets of vectors. And we can show that such UC exists if and only if it could satisfy the condition in the algorithm. Okay, so now let's go to the example. Here we consider a noisy Heisenberg model example, a 2-qubit unital channel. It's a unitary, which is a Hamiltonian evolution, followed by noise. Here the unitary encode the parameter theta in the coupling strength of the Heisenberg interaction XX, YY, ZZ. And actually, to use our algorithm, we don't really need to write the cross operators of the noise. It's the whole T theta is only required to be given in the matrix form. So this may be more directly suitable for experimental data. But here, for the simplicity of presentation, we can present one possible cross operator representation for the noise based on these two, based on these four cross operators. Each Wi is a unitary. And if phi I is zero, it actually is a C0 gate, but we can assume that phi I can be different real numbers. but of course they are constant numbers independent of the parameter theta. And also each unitary wi follows some poly operator. For example, here identity x tensor x tensor y and I tensor z. So one could easily see that this is a non-trivial example because these noise operators do not commute and they do not commute with signal. And also Ki dagger Kj do not commute with each other. So we cannot use the previous condition for constructing ancilla-free QEC in this case. And also, this noise do not stabilize some subspace, so we cannot just work within that subspace not affected by the noise. So we can use our approach very easily to find this signal operator, which has two non-zero eigenvalues with mutually orthogonal eigenmatrices. And also we can apply our algorithm one and we can find a unitary control numerically for achieving the Heisenberg limit. But of course, this is not good for a presentation. So here I assume that at least I can separate the T noise and the unitary. And then I only consider this T noise and finally append some unitary dagger to remedy the effect of the unitary rotation. So let's just consume the T noise part. To get a more understandable solution, we can apply algorithm to T noise. And we find some tilde UC here for tilde R1 and tilde R2 without this UT theta. So they are in such simple forms. But still, we just need to use our algorithm one in the numerical code. And it happens to output a simple solution in this case. This solution is simply tilde UC is C naught. And it corresponds to the case where phi I is zero for WI. So intuitively, even if this WI can be different with different phi I, but they have the common effect of C naught rotation on this subspace of R tilde R1 and tilde R2. So we can reverse this effect by a unitary. So that's the intuition why we can use unitary control to kind of to restore the Heisenberg limit. Finally, we just choose the unitary control also considering this rotation of UT theta at the true value of theta. And also the input state is in a simple form because we can show that we can simply care about the first qubit and the second qubit can go through any state preparation error, which does not affect our lower bound on the Heisenberg limit. So in this sense, it's fully robust to the state preparation error on the second qubit. If all WI is the same. Okay, so this example could demonstrate three key distinctions between our approach and QEC. So we provide an algorithmic routine to find the probe state and an identical unitary control for achieving the Heisenberg limit without ancilla. While such a routine is lacking in general for ancilla-free QEC, and we do not need single measurement, which may require additional noiseless ancilla. And also in some cases, it's also possible to find some robust input state. For example, input all the information into the one qubit, and the other qubit can be arbitrary, and apply some unitary for preparing the input state, and we can achieve the Heisenberg limit. Yes, so actually above is already everything I want to share about the work. But here, maybe I can mention a little bit about another work where we use a numerical algorithm, which may be more of practical use for experiments, to optimize a metrological protocol with ancilla constraints. So roughly speaking, the idea is just to express the quantum circuit and the derivative of the quantum circuit using tensor networks. And here, the scenario is a little bit different because we assume that we can use CPTP control. So instead of unitary, it's a little bit different. So ancilla here just mean memory. We can have some short time ancilla for implementing CPTP here. And in this case, the computational complexity for each round updating all the input state and all the control is ON square. So the main advantage is that we can compute the derivative of the quantum channel in an easy way like this, and computing the derivative is almost the same costly as computing the output state using this matrix product operator formula. So using this approach, we evaluate n from 1 to 100 channels, and we find that although QEC could be asymptotically tight in this example of phase estimation with X noise, we could still achieve a higher quantum phase information for finite n. Here we assume that we have one noiseless ancilla. So we can use QEC and we can compare our approach and find that it could have some advantage. Here I just show n up to 10, but actually we still have the advantage for n up to 100. But yes, indeed, the advantage will be smaller than n is larger, and this could be expected because of the asymptotic optimality of the QEC. Okay, I would like to conclude this talk with a summary and outlook. So we provide a new perspective, bridging quantum metrology and asymptotic theory of quantum channels. And we provide sufficient conditions for achieving Heisenberg limits with or without identical unitary control. And our formalism is applicable to more resource deficient scenarios in sensors with limited programmability. So some future work could include how about the necessary conditions? And this is actually, for single qubit case, this is done by Zhou's paper, but can we generalize this to higher dimensions, perhaps also using our framework? And also, I mainly focus on Heisenberg limit, but our theorem one can also achieve condition for achieving standard quantum limit. So can we find some simpler conditions for achieving standard quantum limit in certain cases? And can we have some more applications in the real world scenarios? Yes, that's it. Thank you.
Thank you, Joshua, for a nice talk. So is there any question from the audience? So, yeah, if not, I guess I can ask a question. So, I was wondering about the condition sufficient conditions you derived. So, how does it so what does it look like when you consider, for example, like a tensor product of two identical channel or like you consider like tensor, like for example, you have two copies of the same quantum channel and then you try to apply your sufficient conditions. So how does things change? So
You mean
yeah,
saying
basically like for example, if there's one channel that you cannot achieve Heisenberg limit, can you achieve it by like putting tensor product of bunch of them together or not?
yeah, that's a very interesting thing. I didn't think about that too much. Yes, I think if it's just simple tensor product, probably using our condition would not give you a metrological advantage.
Yeah.
So, but if the noise is kind of different, for example, in my case, we have some strange type of noise for the ZZ rotation, for this rotation. Actually, the ZZ is enough for achieving Heisenberg. So in this correlation terms, perhaps one could expect that there may be some non-trivial examples you can achieve the Heisenberg limit. But yeah, I didn't consider too much about the tensor product.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, that's
So,
good.
yeah, I guess another question is about your algorithm to find the unitary control. So, do you think you can generalize that to, for example, like some quantum channel CPTB control?
I'm not sure. I think right. That would be a yeah, of course that would be a good direction. But here I largely use the idea that the unitary preserve the angles between vectors or between subspaces. I'm not sure if we allow more general channels, what would it be like? Sorry, I don't have a good idea.
Yeah, so also I think you briefly talk about like you can also have like ancilla in this type of scenario. So what changed if you have like an ancilla, like finite bounded ancilla? So
I feel that for yeah, still I don't think of it too much, but I feel like if we only allow unitary control, maybe even if we have ancilla, by my condition, you cannot get too much advantage.
Thank you.
But yeah, of course, this bond is not guaranteed to be very tight, so there's a lot more we may consider to do. So so this bond is just a lower bond, and it's hard to say how tight it is.
So you are saying that with your quantum channel, maybe there exists other control that can be performed better than this unitary, or
I'm not sure, so right. That's something I cannot be sure.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, so yeah, I guess if there's no other questions, let's thank Choshu again. And yeah, hopefully you can visit Parameter in person sometime in the future. Yeah.
Yeah, I hope so. And welcome to Hong Kong if you're interested.
Okay, oh yeah, thank you.